This is the La Jolla International Fashion Film Festival, presented by Fred Sweet. Yes, that's a lot of alliteration. Fred Sweet, the organizer and founder of this festival, shares his mission and ideas for a world-class event where filmmakers, fashion designers, and artists can share their purpose-driven collaborations in a supportive atmosphere. In preparing for this weekend event, which was July 23rd and 24th, 2021, I had Zooms with a few of the jurists, including the iconic Heinz Holba, who founded LA Models, New York Model Management, and several offspring initiatives. 30 years strong in the agency business, he's worked with the biggest brands, the top designers, buyers and sellers, and supermodels. And beyond running his mini empire for talent and models, he flies his own plane in his spare time and is very close with his three daughters. We had the pleasure of meeting his teen daughter, a tiny powerhouse herself, little Charlie, who I know cherished the time with some of my agency clients, who included Ashley Aguillard, Emily Alibi, Sophina De Jesus, and the lovely Julia Steyer, who beyond being a client on camera with More Zap is also a beta reader of scripts and book manuscripts, helps to edit and present all kinds of materials, and I call her my Emily Blunt, referencing the best assistant ever in Devil Wears Prada, which is totally apropos to this event. One of the VIPs, Larry Namer, and I enjoyed some face-to-face, and though it was noisy, it was also extremely exciting to be in the midst of the many screening rooms, the hubbub and walk-by traffic of other media reps, artists, and filmmakers walking the lot in La Jolla, the venue where this event took place. Larry and I had met before at his offices for Metan Media in the Valley, and then we got into how he's been involved with this event, why he's inspired by it, and it is crucial to recognize him as the founder of E! Entertainment Television, which he launched with $2.5 million as a cable station, and now is, of course, worth billions and billions of dollars and owned by NBC Universal. Gail Garrison, in dark sunglasses and a white blonde bob, is a true presence of power. She is the creative director of the Global Fashion Channel, and I must say we also had the pleasure of meeting her paparazzi wherever she went. A former elite model in her youth, she now works with clients and partners in Southeast Asia and Africa to procure, produce, and distribute her original content all about fashion, art, and design. Finally, Rebecca Bustamante, past president of Women in Film, Washington, D.C., and an actor and creative in her own right, returns to La Jolla to be a judge and presenter for Best Cinematography. These short films were 6 to 12 minutes long and were developed and produced by artists all over the globe in an open submission policy. I got to interview one particular creative team. They call themselves Architects, and their film was called Savage Facades. I loved all their energy, all of their accents, and all of their stories. So please listen to everything. You're going to get kernels of gold and really enjoy everything about this fantastic podcast, the La Jolla International Fashion and Film Festival.
Welcome to Passion to Power with your host, Michelle Zeitlin. She's a creative producer who quote-unquote wears many hats. She's also a talent and literary manager and founded the company More Zap Productions and Management. She develops people and projects across all media. Her guests encompass the gamut, from artists to authors, actors to activists. Please welcome Michelle Zeitlin, Passion to Power.
Right here with Rebecca, who I had the pleasure of Zooming with, and now we're in front of the red carpet. She's about to present for
Best Cinematography.
Sophia Altholz.
I would say what we're taking from this experience and this event is, first of all, the quality of people and the level of curiosity that each individual seems to have. I would also say it's a beautiful mix of just genuine creativity. Everyone is very creative in different mediums, and I really respect that. We definitely mentioned that we appreciate and love, you know, the branching out into new mediums. We're artists and architects. We made this film for the first time. I've never acted before. They've never made a film before. So this was a first for all of us. And the fact that we're able to get to this level of an event and meet this high quality of people is so exciting. And it's making us very, very passionate and excited for our future projects.
Which is good, because the show is called Passion to Power. So we love talking about passion. Tell me about the dress.
So the dress was designed by one of my best friends, Nelly Guinan. She's a Venezuelan Mexico City designer. She has a studio in Mexico City. She makes incredible couture gown evening wear. She's so talented. I went in kind of blindly, not knowing what this process was like, and this is what she put together, you can imagine.
We're going to get some photos in a second.
My name, Claudio Napolitano. I was cinematographer for this beautiful piece, this apartment created by Jack and Gabriel. My mission was to portrait in an OCD environment, an OCD point of view with an OCD lighting, to transmit the obsession that a person might be living on that beautiful place.
Yeah, hello, I'm Jack Solkin from Savage Facades. We're very excited to be here, truly. This is our first experience in these types of festivals. We're meeting amazing people, and the opportunity to showcase our work in festivals like this, it's been an amazing experience.
What's the name of the film? Say it one more time.
Savage Facades.
All right, next please say your name and a little bit about the project.
Yeah, well, my name is Gabriel Askenazi. And, well, for me, it has been a really great, amazing experience. First of all, we're architects. Before being directors or filmmakers, this is our first time doing something like this. And I think that creativity comes in many ways and has many faces. And this has been a really great experience, because we got to experiment being directors and being filmmakers, and everybody here in the festival has been like family. They've treated us when we arrived like with a really great energy, and I mean we are getting to know a lot of people, other directors, filmmakers, artists, Fred Sweet, who has been very sweet to us.
Our main criteria is that we want supportive people coming. And our mission, which we tell everyone, is to support and empower creative professionals worldwide in the fashion space, fashion filmmaking. That's what we're here for. It's a very tiny niche. And so there are some films that compete with films from mega companies like Prada, LVMH.
Wow.
And people say, why did you put that little film in? And I tell them that we're here to support people. It's not only art. It's not only art. Okay, fine. You know, art, you can go to the Louvre and look at it. But unless it's combined with a meaningful process and a meaningful goal, to me it's not really worth it. So we do have people coming from this year, of course, because of the virus, most of the Europeans couldn't come. But we have all sorts of people coming, and a lot of new designers. And yeah, this year we have people from all the media companies, and it's just really been a nice evolution.
The show I host is called Passion to Power, and I think we can add a P, because you're now giving purpose-driven opportunities.
Yes, exactly.
And for me, it's about the process of creation, not the ultimate win or the ultimate success that designer or a creative has, right? It's in sharing your art and how it's received and supported.
Right, exactly.
Right. Well, I can't thank you enough for having us. And my listeners actually are all over the map. We have a growing listener base in the UK because I do a lot of educational forums in the United Kingdom, Australia. Primarily, we have two pods of listeners, the 18 to 26 aspirational creatives, some who are very interested in fashion. So can you offer a couple kernels of gold to that young group?
Well, I would just say it's nowadays the technology is a lot more accessible. So trying to distinguish yourself just visually is probably not the best path because too many people can do it and it's too easy to do. So they have to stick with story-driven, human stories, stories that have meaning. That's what people want nowadays. That's why documentaries are so huge now.
Right.
You know, look, if they can do a Game of Thrones, I say do it. But most people can't. So, but if they can do a story, we have a story in a film this year about this woman from the South with these big hats. And she lived through the Civil Rights period, and she was here. She is here.
I think I saw her today. She looked like I had an Easter bonnet and a violet dress.
Right.
Lilac.
You have people looking at that film,
yes,
and it's like a docudrama, and they're crying, and they say it's fabulous. That's what people want to connect with human feelings. So I would tell people that, look, it's a long road. There really is no instant success anymore for the simple reason that someone can be an instant success, and then the next thing, they're kind of an instant no good.
Okay.
So there's no guarantee. It's a constant striving for creating things, creating art that people will value and want to see. So that has to be the goal. It can't just be become famous, because people become unfamous, as you know. Even fashion lines go up and they go down.
That's why they use the word trends, right?
Right. Yeah, that's one of the reasons. Yeah.
Well, Fred, I'm delighted to have you, and it looks like Heinz Holba is here for his interview. And thank you for offering the red carpet to my family of wonderful clients. And we're having a blast, by the way. And so you will get full support. And people will know about this festival if they didn't before, all over the map. And maybe they'll be aspiring to submit their own films.
That would be my pleasure.
Okay. Thanks, Fred.
Okay. That was one. Look at that.
All right, we are very lucky to have Heinz Holba here.
Yes, you are.
At a beautiful La Jolla event. Just letting you know I'm lucky.
I'm very lucky to see you here tonight as well.
We had the pleasure of Zooming together.
Yeah.
And now we have the pleasure of actually sitting across from one another, which is a rare thing in the last 18 months.
Yeah, it's a lot more fun than Zooming, isn't it?
Isn't it fun? You get such a great feeling about people. So having just spoken to Fred Sweet about the reason behind this event, and he said it's really to inspire and support artists.
Yes.
And you have supported models, designers, photographers all over the world. And we talked about the fact that you started with the LA Modeling Agency and basically helped to build a fashion division in Los Angeles to compete with the Parises and the Milans and the New Yorks, correct?
Yeah, to complement more than compete.
Okay.
You know, competing is a little bit far-fetched at this point,
right?
But we are working with them. And LA is getting to have more of a name, more of a respected name in the fashion industry. It used to be only jeans and t-shirt.
Yes.
Now it's getting a little more elegant.
Right, but they were Calvin Klein's jeans and t-shirts, so they were fancy.
Absolutely.
We touched on your company a little bit, but if you could repeat some of those things. You said to me that the most dynamic thing about a model these days is not necessarily her looks or her or his height or weight or shape, it's the personality.
Absolutely, yes.
I want to hear more about that.
It takes personality, like you have, for example. You're a perfect example. No, you have to have a personality, a certain level of charm, and that has to be natural too. A lot of people are more shy, but they come out when they on stage or when they talk to people. Like a lot of comedians are actually very serious when they are not doing comedy.
Right.
So, you know, it takes that certain skill that makes people like each other. and there's no magic reason for it. You can't learn it or teach it. It's just you, some people are more charming and attract people than others. And as a model, that's very important, same for actors.
So one thing we touched on, but I want you to elaborate, is what does a model do for a designer besides be a co-rep? What is it?
It makes, the model makes the designer's clothes look better. And if they can't do that, then they're not the right model. Or the right clothes, but usually you try to match the clothes, the mood with the model.
And how do people cast in the modeling business?
Well, the casting directors, they have that skill. Casting for a movie is different than casting for a model or for anything else. So casting directors are skilled. The fashion casting directors are specialized in that. It's a small group, and they're very powerful.
And they know what the brand needs.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
We hope.
And we talked about the fact that sometimes you're working with mother agents all over the country and in foreign markets.
Of course, yeah, absolutely.
And they help support and develop the talent. So by the time they come to LA Models or New York Model Management, they've sort of achieved their skills.
A certain entry level skills, okay. You know, because you can't learn everything, and we're not a school, and schools are not that great in this industry. So it's just some way you learn on the job, but you have to have a certain look and a certain personality to start with.
So is there a difference between the New York look and the LA look?
No, I think for fashion, it's a global industry now. And as you know, from influencers, all the campaigns, everything is global. Everybody wants the top model, but not everybody has the money for that. So you work your way down from supermodels to a less, just as good, but not as less expensive models. Depends on the budget the client has. Everything is up in the air because of the virus situation. You know, people don't really know exactly what their numbers are anymore because of shipments arriving late or getting delayed or price increased and so on. As you know, a lot of stuff comes from Asia and other countries.
Right.
So everything is up in the air. We're hoping for the best.
That's a fabulous outfit, right? Has kind of an East Indian quality to it. So in the days of the New York Fashion Week or Paris Fashion Week, everybody would congregate and literally elbow to elbow to sit and watch the designers with
in
their
the past,
grand,
yeah. Yeah, not last year, not this year.
Not right. So it's been at least a couple of years.
Well, because of the distancing now, since the COVID, a lot of shows were stopped last year. Now some of them are streaming or masked, or the public has to be distanced, and it's just not the same atmosphere. But it's a battle, and at least we're keeping everything alive. That's the most important.
Okay, I have a question. This kind of not only touches on the modeling and on the designers, but on the merchandising side.
Of course, absolutely.
There's buyers, there's sellers. Can you speak to that as an enhanced market?
Well, it's more difficult for buyers and sellers now because the shipments can't come in. A lot of ships are delayed. A lot of political issues are between certain countries, which also affects import and export. You know, China has an issue, Vietnam, and so on. All that is going to be resolved, but right now it's a bit of a battle in the middle, and it doesn't help things. But eventually, global trade will resume, and people will go back to normal, but, you know, it takes some time.
You also told me you're a very hands-on CEO.
Well, I think that's the important. Everybody should be, otherwise you shouldn't be a CEO.
So how do you support and encourage and keep everybody motivated and excited during a crisis like we experienced the last 18 months?
A lot of beatings and whipping.
You know, I did see you come in with a big prop.
I know. I left it in the car. Yeah.
My leather. All right, but seriously, folks.
I'm very serious.
Okay, remind me not to work for a high-end school bus.
No, please don't.
I want to maintain my fan base.
There you go.
I want to know a little more about what you like to do on your downtime. You probably don't have much, but what are some of the hobbies and things you enjoy?
Well, I don't have that much downtime. Most important time that I spend outside the industry is with my daughters when I can, because they travel, they're busy, they're doing things.
And you have three of them, right?
Three of them, yeah. They're all different. I love them all.
I'm from three girls.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the eldest. I also say I'm the smartest and the funniest.
That's her. She's the youngest. And the smartest and the funniest. Yeah, but different. You're funny.
Okay, so what about tennis, golf? I mean, you are at the
tournament. Yeah, I play tennis. tennis and, you know, different things. I have a small airplane that I fly on weekends sometimes.
Oh, that's nice.
That's busy enough. I'm busy enough.
Wow. Yeah. So you have a pilot's license? Uh-huh. Oh, my goodness. That's a cool thing to
see
know. It? Yeah. I can show you my COVID vaccination card.
Oh, I have that too.
Heinz, we talked about the listeners of Passion to Power, and we didn't get to get enough advice from you. This is really what I want to get from you. There are two pods, the 18 to 26 creatives, maybe designers, aspiring models, talent on camera, actors, writers, people in programming and technology. Then there's the people in my pod, the 42 to 59 is the analytic, people who are making seismic shifts. And I would love for you to offer some advice and thoughts to each of these groups.
Well, I mean, they're very experienced people. The advice would be to just take it easy on the non-experienced people and be easy with them and try to be helpful in teaching, which, you know, in this industry, it's very emotional and people are a little bit short-tempered at times because there's issues. Every fashion show, events like this, so people get to tend to be tense, and the new people in the industry take this very serious. So we need to be conscious of that. And for the young people, just learn as much as you can. Every day you learn something in this business. Unless you keep your eyes and ears open and take an example and learn, then it's not going to happen. You have to be self-educated to a large degree. But everything is available on the internet, on computers. Bad things are available, of course, as well, 50% or so. But self-education is not so difficult right now.
So speaking of education, many of my listeners are on non-traditional trajectories to their goals. Mm-hmm. I certainly am a non-traditional learner, and I've continued to learn because I was out of the box at a very young age, 16, living in New York on my own to be a ballerina. Then I became a director choreographer, I'm a talent manager. So I've had kind of a non-traditional path. What was yours?
Very non-traditional. It was more on the business side. You know, flying planes and real estate business and so on. But I do like this industry because it's creative and you can generate new things. Every day is different. It doesn't get boring. It gets frustrating, but it doesn't get boring. And it's very satisfying if somebody is successful because they deserve it and they worked hard on it. Some kids get lucky and are successful anyway, but don't count on that. You need to work on it, basically. And information is available. There's magazines, everything is on the internet, and you can just pick out what you want and how to educate yourself about the industry.
All right, well, I'm looking forward to hearing you present.
Yes.
And I'm so looking forward to sharing your story. And is there anything that you would like to add that perhaps I didn't ask about, something that people don't know about Heinz Holba, besides you sound like
Heinz Ketchup? No, not that much to know. What you're doing is good, and you should keep doing it. Encourage young people. Try. If you don't succeed, try again, and then do something else. But just keep trying something. Eventually, you'll come up with something that you really like.
And then you'll take me for a ride on your private plane. Because I've already gotten an invitation from Larry Namer. He's going to make me his chicken parmesan. I must have found like 500 Getty images.
Of me?
Yes.
They're all fake.
But they're much too old. Someone needs to show your silver fox side, I got to say.
I asked Larry Namer about his legacy, and he said, gosh, has somebody been talking to my doctor? Is there a problem? I guess he feels too young to have a legacy already, but he's created an empire in the media world. He's also created initiatives and launched other people's startups, and he's been a mentor to USC students, and he's even a godfather to a Chinese baby through his relationships with his work overseas in China in television. And Larry said probably his legacy is his chicken parmesan.
Every year now I give out the Best Picture Award.
So you're a big moffer, as they say.
Yeah, that's a rumor, yeah.
For the uninitiated, that would be Yiddish. My mother would have said that. A very important person, VIP. Tell us about what you're doing now, Larry, outside of watching a lot of fashion short films and judging them.
Sure. I've got a company called Natan, which is in China. And oddly enough, we produce TV, film, internet content, live events, everything in Mandarin, everything in Chinese, which has been an interesting experience. there with one of my greatest achievements is I actually wrote a sitcom about the contradictions of modern Chinese life, and it it was nominated at the Asia TV Awards in the best comedy category, which is interesting that, you know, it was the only show from China that was nominated. So the funniest TV show in China is written by a New York Jew. There's an irony in that.
How did you learn to speak Chinese?
I don't speak it well, and you've never really heard Mandarin until you've heard it with a Brooklyn accent. It's scary. I throw myself in, I immerse myself in it. I lived in China probably 60% of the time for a few years. And I'm not sure that I'm ready to have a legacy yet. I mean, it kind of cracks me up now. You know, I get lifetime achievement awards and I'm going, oh my God, you know, they've spoken to my doctor, that they know something that I don't, you know. Because I still think my best stuff is out there in front of me. It's certainly not behind me. I mean, he was great. You know, you get, look, 142 countries. It's arguably the greatest influencer. Everybody uses that term. I mean, there's no bigger influencer of pop culture than he. I mean, Kardashians and, you know, you look at that stuff. But, you know, to me, that was very logical. You know, people around the world love Hollywood gossip. How hard is it to figure that one out? Yeah, you know, when I did the sitcom in China, I said, okay, you know, I've never written comedy before. I wrote a sitcom that went 70 episodes, 7-0. Was nominated for the best, you know, comedy category for the Asia TV Awards. I don't speak the language. I didn't grow up there. I said, that's a challenge. That's a good one. I like that one.
Wow.
I mean, we got very spoiled during the Cold War. We just thought that everybody wanted to be American or marry an American or move to America and stuff. And that was true when you looked at Russia and the Eastern Europeans. You know, during the 90s, we had a flood of Russian girls looking for husbands here. But China's very different because Chinese people are actually very happy to be Chinese. So they want to learn about Western culture. They want to learn about our food and our, you know, our history and our traditions and stuff. They don't necessarily want to be us, and they're real happy to be Chinese. So the smartest thing we did when we went in there, most Western companies that went into China would go, okay, here's what I do in Australia, and, you know, we'll subtitle it in Chinese for you and stuff, and not even, you know, instead of even knowing that it's Mandarin, there's no such thing as Chinese language. But we went in and said, we're going to produce in Chinese for the Chinese audience specifically, and stuff, and that's made the difference. So we've been in China for 10 years now, 11 years, and we've had 5 major TV series on national TV. We've done hundreds of internet content things, and we've done live events and all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, I'm doing, it seems like to be my life's work, I'm trying to make this movie called Empress. Empress is the story of the first woman ruler of China.
Wow.
But it's not done as a historical. You know, I went to the Chinese government and I said, this woman is fascinating. I want to do a movie. You guys going to be okay? And they said, yeah. But actually, they suggested to me, they said, Larry, do the movie in English. I said, how do I do the movie in English? Use Chinese. They said, use American Chinese, use Canadian Chinese. They said, if you do the movie in Mandarin and you subtitle it, maybe 1% of people might ever see that movie. But if you do it in English and the movie's good, you might actually teach people a little about Chinese culture and Chinese history. So I bought a book about her, Empress Wu, and I brought on Ron Bass. Ron won the Academy Award for...
I love Ron Bass. I had lunch with Ron Bass before.
Huge, big shot. Yeah, Ron won the Academy Award for... Ron won the Academy Award for Rain Man. He co-wrote Joy Luck Club and probably 50 other features. So Ron wrote it. And, you know, the way we do it, she's not a historical Chinese figure. She's a woman struggling to make it in a male-dominated society, which is a more universal theme.
In what time period?
She lived like 1,200 years ago.
Wow.
But still considered, her reign was considered the greatest era of prosperity in the history of China, even more so than now. And... But, you know, you could imagine the travails that she went through, you know. where, you know, all the guys didn't want to see her ruling. And
that's fascinating.
Yeah, so that's a fun one. So I'm trying to get that made.
So how early are you in the game there? Do you have a script?
Yeah, we've got a script. The script is amazing. We worked on it with Ron literally for 3 years until we got it to where, you know, because we were self-financing, so I didn't have investors sitting over me going, make it, make it, make it. So we just, you know, decided we knew exactly what we wanted that movie to be, and we just kept working on it until we got it. And then, you know, we were ready to go, and then COVID came. So we put it on ice for a while, and, you know, it'll come back in 2022. We'll make it, and hopefully be in the theater winter, you know, 2023.
So will you hire an American, Australian, or Chinese, or would you hire a Chinese actress?
It's got to be American, Chinese, Canadian, Chinese. We have one, we actually made up one character that didn't exist in the book to be a British girl whose family sent her to China to learn art and culture and stuff like that. Because we wanted to get at least one Westerner into the cast. So it's kind of, you know, the pandemic has exposed people to a lot of good stuff, and they started to realize that, you know, that it's more than just going to movies, you know, once a month.
Yeah, it's amazing, and such great content, really elevated content. Yeah. Well, thank you, Larry. I know we're going to see each other later. We have to take a photo, and later on when you're going to invite me over for that chicken parmesan.
You got it.
Okay. Any last words you'd like to add?
Nope. See you later.
See you later. Okay, we're good. Gail, would you please tell us about the Global Fashion Channel, what it is, how you're involved, and what you're covering here?
Yes, I'm the creative director for the Global Fashion Channel. This has been 5 years in the making, and we have distribution worldwide. We have been covering La Jolla Fashion International Fashion Film Festival now for 6 years. I'm a big fan of Fred, and we on the channel have a lot of the films that win here. We curate some of the best fashion films that we see, and we actually highlight them to give them exposure on the Global Fashion Channel. And the Global Fashion Channel is built for the fashion industry. It's to highlight the fashion designers, fashion film producers, artists, makeup artists. It's not about Hollywood. It's about the people in the business and everything about the business that makes it work. And we're really here to educate, uplift, and inspire the next generation. And we do that through the creativity. And we believe very much in highlighting artists and artists from all around the world.
You were like, oh, I'm creative director. So, but you're an all around creative person.
I was a designer for 20 years. I used to model with Elite, and then I became a stylist, and then I had my own line for 20 years.
And what kind of clothes did you design?
Couture, high end evening wear, sold all around the country, and realized several years ago with a tech company that the future was streaming. And when you could see Netflix and Prime and all these things taking off, but realized that there really wasn't something that was built for the fashion industry. So we've spent 5 years in building out the tech aspect, which is the tech, the portal, the streaming aspect with Scuddy ad markers that we will be dropping the ads. And then we've been working on massive distribution deals globally. Again, this is a channel to highlight the industry, photographers, makeup artists. We film all around the world, and it's to introduce people to artists, lots of artists. And so having been an artist myself, I'm now at the second phase as you get older, and now I'm here to help other artists get exposure worldwide.
This is so perfect because the name of my podcast is Passion to Power. And like yourself, I was an artist as a young person, and now I'm a talent literary manager, producer. And I started this podcast because, well, I started it in front of a live audience in early 2020, pivoted after two episodes because it had to be remote when the world shut down, and continued as a creative catalyst of conversation to keep us all inspired and connected.
And you know what? It's really important to do that today because I feel very strongly we are in an amazing transformation globally and worldwide into an awakening. And I think it's something that in schools we've lost music, we've lost art, we've lost the creative aspect. And so that's what I hope the channel does, is inspires people. You know, not everyone is 5'10" and can be a model, but can you be a makeup artist, a stylist, podcast? There's so many aspects that I try to make sure everyone feels important, you know. And it's also giving out positive positive role models for all, everybody to look at. And it's and I'm very concerned when I'm filming, and let's say we're backstage, that I want to make sure everybody's showcased. Is it a Black model? Is it a Chinese designer? I really want everyone to be able to see themselves in somebody else. And because so often I find fashion alienates people. I have it, you don't. And I feel that fashion can be creative, you know, even if you don't have a lot of money. Sometimes a streetwear fashion week is more exciting than the runway shows, okay? So I feel that it's important to inspire people to get back to their creative self, which happens to be their soul or their intuition, in my firm belief.
So tell me about your distribution and partnership deals now around the world.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, we've signed with Huawei, the phone company, and will be distributed into 100 million phones worldwide. So that's launching here in September. We've worked 2 years on this. Huawei is the second largest phone manufacturer in the world. We don't have it in the US, but when you deal with Europe, Southeast Asia, and all over, they have their new TV app, and we'll be one of the first live channels in that. So it's been 2 years in working out all the tech aspect to deliver ads worldwide.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and then there's Africa. We are working with Coleman Murray with Media Brokerage of Africa, working on distribution all through Africa. So I have someone now that's handling Europe. I have someone that's handling Africa. I'm actually in talks. I have a Chinese partner where we're translating everything in Chinese so it will air in China. And it really truly is meant to be global. We go around the world filming. So we are filming from Beijing to Seoul to Tokyo to Dubai to London to Paris, Milan. So we really try to go and film all over the world to give representation of artists. And even if an artist is starting out and they might not be a Dior, Louis Vuitton, or a big designer, you can still highlight them and make them look really good. And that's really what my job is.
I want to ask you about the content on the Global yep. Fashion Channel. Is it mostly talk and...
No. As a matter of fact, I'd say it's very visual. It's probably 60% visual. So okay. We have media distribution agreements with a lot of major brands. So Versace, Armani. So we work with them. They'll give us some of their fashion shows, you know, so we work with that. We also film. So we have exclusive access where we go and we film backstage. We do special events. That would be art expos, art openings. We have luxury lifestyle, which will take people behind the scenes to high-end hotels around the world, yachts, Geneva Motor Show, which is one of the ones I really love because it really shows you cars that we would never, ever see.
I just interviewed Tammy Powers, who's normalizing drag racing for women.
There's so many facets, and yeah. But we look at everything from a design perspective, okay. not here's a yacht, look what we have. Again, it's who is the architect, who is the shipbuilder, who is the interior designer, because people need to understand it's really an art form. You know, you look at these hotels, you look at this stuff. We've done the Armani Hotel in Milan. And Giorgio Armani will want his seal of approval on that video when it's done. That's how picky some of these people are. So you need to be able to tell the story of who is his hotel. So now I have to make sure that we tell the story to the best brands that they're proud of what we've done.
Fantastic. Well, I can't thank you enough.
My pleasure.
It's
thank you for coming
easy
down.
To interview you because I ask you a question and you just go. And you're very good extemporaneously off the cuff. You speak so well. And you're also very clear. If I could add one more question.
Sure.
Okay. So what's in 5 years? You said that you're kind of in your next. What's in the next 5 years?
I would assume I am still here with this particular brand, building it, staying. I think the important thing is to keep the integrity of what this channel is about. It isn't a reality show. It isn't junk TV. It really is to take people to museums, cultural events around the world, to introduce you to fashion designers here with this, you know, these fashion film producers from around the world and see their creativity, to see what they do. And so in that case, it's really keeping the unity. And I think most importantly, we need to all look at each other and respect every culture globally. And I think the more that you can showcase different artists from different places, we don't have to point our fingers at other people. I think we can understand each other better when we can see, wow, they're just like I am, or, oh, they think like this. And so in that case, it's trying to bridge that gap just globally, that we all start to get along a little better.
Very well said. Gail, thank you so much.
Thank you for
having
me.
You've got to get on the red carpet and get to work. And we're going to be very proud to promote and let people know about the Global Fashion Channel and yourself.
Well, thank you. And I always encourage everyone that's going off like you are. There's so many different avenues today, especially for women, to think outside of the box, whether it's a podcast, whether it's this. And one thing I've learned is that you can have a small following. It's okay. You know, a really small,
a
loyal
micro influencer
yeah,
can go very far.
And so I always tell people, you know, even with when I see models, when we're filming backstage and I see a model and it's like, okay, that's the top model. She's opening the show. But then I'm like, but is there a new beginner that's starting and this is the first time she's walking in a show? And you try to show, because we can all see the end result. I think we all forget the steps that we have to take and to stay consistent with those steps to get that end result. But we always glorify the end. And so often people can't encourage someone when they're starting something new or starting a new podcast or starting this or starting that.
Well, thank you for saying that. And actually this entire podcast has been word of mouth and promotion by the actual people who I've interviewed who have shared with their colleagues. So the echelon of listeners is tremendous. She's so popular that we've been interrupted. Tell me your name.
This is Paparazzi.
Francesca Ann.
Paparazzi.
Okay, the Paparazzi. Yes, doesn't she look? She thought you would recognize her with the glasses on.
Not only a very beautiful woman, but she's very smart, charming, intelligent. She has every quality that any man would
want.
And she's a fabulous designer. She used to be the most beautiful designer. So she's very, very talented.
Well,
so we are very, very proud.
And what's my blood type, Jock?
Jock, you have to say your full name.
My name is Jock Silverstein.
And you're Francesca. Thank you very much.
Jacques is a famous fashion photographer, very, very big in the 80s when I was with Elite Modeling, and he was doing lots of covers of magazines. So it's a small, small world as we all grow up.
Let's get a photo all together.
Come on over here.
And Julia will get some pictures.
It's a podcast. Come on in. Here's my paparazzi. Duck down.
Everyone needs a good entourage.
Get in here.
One, two, three. Beautiful.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for interrupting my live interview.
Yes. And you have a dog to a service. Hello.
Fufu.
Of course.
This is Jacques. You know, he reminds me of Pepe Le Pew.
He
knows that. Oh, yeah.
I love the Pepe Le Pew.
Pepe Le Pew. It becomes a small world over the years. And he was right. I was a fashion designer for 20 years in New York City.
Okay, so wait. Now we got to talk about that, because I like your job.
Yeah.
And you do it well. I can tell. You're glowing. You love what you do.
Miss Bustamante, if you could list your top three skills and why you think you're perfect in this industry and why the industry fits you, what are they?
I would say I love collaborating with others, and this industry is nothing in film and media if you cannot collaborate. I'm also really good at creating high-powered teams. So I'm good at empowering people who are experts or specialize in a particular area to really excel and do their best so that the final product is at its highest peak that it could possibly be at. And also just making them feel good. I'm also, I think, very creative. And I don't think you can be successful without having your own unique sort of creative voice that's going to come out in your work.
So this show is called Passion to Power, and it's all about, first of all, enlisting and finding the passion within, then being able to use your word, empower it, and then make yourself powerful by figuring out where you fit in the industry and creating your own trajectory. And I would say you've probably done that very well on the bi-coasts.
Yeah, it's interesting because the path that I thought I had for myself isn't the path I've taken. And I've heard this from other peers of mine as well. You may think I'm getting off track. I'm not going the straight and narrow. It's not the normal trajectory for someone to do this mixed bag and have this like variety of experiences. But then somehow magically, the fact that I've had the variety and the depth of experience has actually made me much better and made me be, I think I'm perceived as someone who has more experience and more to offer because I have breadth and depth.
I don't know if you figured out you made a little rhyme, but I love I have breadth and depth. The two pods are the 18 to 26. The 18 to 26 is the creative aspirants, the ones who want to embark on their own journey. I call it your yellow brick road to success because I use a lot of Oz analogies. And then the other one is those that I'm involved with, the pod that is a little older, that's going through seismic shifts, probably pre-pandemic, but especially during the pandemic. And as 34 episodes of the show were created remotely during a world pandemic, a lot of people have shifted, not only come in and out of work, but figured out, where do I belong and what is my purpose? So with these two pods, could you first speak to what you do to that first young pod and how to possibly give them some advice and engagement? And then to that older 40 to 60 year old pod that's listening.
Okay. I think for younger creatives, they have the passion and they have talent. And a lot of times they focus solely on developing their craft. And what I've seen is they need to also augment that with the business skills, because what will make their work rise to the top of the pile on that executive's desk at that, you know, network studio or the film industry executive who gets it, stuff is going across their desk day after day, is that budget plan looks professional. The way things are written up matches the industry standard, because that's not really out in the ether for people to grab onto so easily, is people in the industry who are making a living at it, and not just a living, but a good living, like they're really comfortable. They expect things to be done a certain way. And I don't know that there's a specific handbook that's out there for people. I think it's about taking workshops with others who are successful that can mentor you and share those skills and help you develop it. They can get a little bit of that, I think, if they're applying for grants. It depends on the organization. Some organizations will have mentoring programs for applicants. I know that Women in Film in Washington, D.C., we really made an effort to do that. If we had an applicant whose work or submission just didn't appear as professional, or maybe the samples of their work could have been presented in a way that would have had more of an impact to the selection committee, we took the time to circle back. And sometimes we might workshop three or four applicants together if they all seem to have the same need to be met. And then I think for the older demographic, if you look at people who are going through, I like the words that you use, seismic shifts. Sometimes that happens when you're making decisions about changing career paths. Sometimes I think it happens out of necessity through a global pandemic, or the place where you were working seemed stable. Suddenly they're having layoffs, and now you've got to go find another job, another way to make your money, doing something that you love, doing something that you enjoy. For those people, I would say it's really important to take a look at your social media presence and your brand, because they've probably built up a really strong business base, but it's going to be about standing out from the crowd. And I have done this myself in my own career. I have gone to an executive coach and said, here's where I am, here's what's going on. Look at my LinkedIn profile, look at my social media presence, and look at my resume. Look at my CV and tell me what needs to change. So it can be something as simple as, I ran a project with a $10 million budget, or this project had a profit margin at the box office. We did 50% profit margin. We had a low budget and we made money. So maybe it wasn't a big budget, but it was successful and it had a high profit margin. I think another thing people may be looking for online is your network, particularly if you're not as strong a presence in the industry yet. You might want to make sure that you're featuring or highlighting people on your resume or on projects who are recognized and known and can give you that extra push to the top of the pile. So maybe you haven't had as many successful box office hits, but you have someone attached to your project that has. So when that person is looking at your materials, it's also kind of getting a little extra clout from the people that you're associated with.
You make a great point. This podcast, you're in very good company. I've interviewed Kevin Beggs, who's the chairman of Lionsgate TV. My last interview was with Farah Ramzan Golant, who is the new CEO EMEA of the Q Collective out of London. I have had the extraordinary good fortune to talk to what I call hashtag big shots. And everybody during this time has been tremendously generous, graceful, and available.